final case today is United States against Davis.
Please the court. Good morning. My name is James McKinley. Good afternoon. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis representing Mr. Dwayne Davis in connection with this appeal of his conviction on one count of possession with intent to distribute about a pound and a half of cocaine that was found on the on a countertop next to the sink in the kitchen of the house where Mr. Davis was residing. He was found guilty on that count, which was count two of the indictment. Sole issue that we've raised in this appeal is whether the trial court abused its discretion in refusing to honor a jury's request to provide a transcript, the testimony of one of the government's witnesses. Specifically, the jury requested to review the transcript of a witness who testified about, or they wanted to know what this witness saw when this witness entered the house. It's a SWAT team law enforcement official who is the lead person in the house. They wanted to hear his testimony again. Now, the defense theory at trial was that the government's case was insufficient to exclude the very real possibility that there was a third person other than Dwayne Davis that owned the cocaine and was actually dealing the cocaine out of the house.
But, you know, Mr. McKinley, while we're on the subject of transcripts, we don't have the full trial transcript. And so it's impossible for us to make a judgment as to how important any potential third-person seller theory was at the trial, how it came out, if it did, how much Mr. Davis stretched it. And since there's generally a harmless error rule anyhow, that's one concern I have about this case. Another is that while it's certainly true that initially Judge McKinney said, I'm going to just tell the jury to rely on their collective memory, he left the door wide open to renewal of this request for the transcript if the jury had come back with another question. In fact, it didn't. But it's awfully hard to call that such an unreasonable way of handling the trial as to be an abuse of discretion.
Let me address the first question, Your Honor, by saying that the defense did not present any witnesses at trial.
So you didn't explore this third party seller possibility at all at trial?
Well, actually, I explored it only in argument. There was evidence at the trial, Your Honor, that my client, during a consensually monitored telephone call between himself and the confidential informant, had made reference to another person. The informant inquired whether he could buy a half ounce of cocaine, to which my client responded, he ain't going to sell you a half, he'll sell you a whole. So I seized on that to argue to the jury that they could conceivably conclude that there was someone other than Dwayne Davis that was actually selling this cocaine. With respect to the second question you asked concerning the way Judge McKinney responded to the request by indicating that we're going to ask them to rely on their collective memory, but if they should come back in, you know, a half an hour and request it again, at that point in time, I will provide the transcript. To me, Your Honor, that was insufficient in the sense that the initial response was basically a message to the jury, we don't have a transcript, and you can conclude from that you're not going to get one. The judge, what the jury was thinking here, I don't know. The government has indicated that, you know, I'm speculating when I describe why the jury asked what it asked. And of course I am speculating. But I'm not speculating when I say that the jury was confused or that there was some disagreement. The government suggests that notwithstanding whatever confusion or disagreement there was, that's of no consequence because the testimony was straightforward, the jury was permitted to take notes, the trial only lasted a day and a half, and therefore their memory of the testimony should be sufficiently sufficiently fresh. And of course, these are the factors that this court recognized in the cases of United States versus Howard and United States versus Guy, which are cited and discussed in the government's brief. But I submit that the government's position here in the rationale of those cases falls short in second-guessing what was important to the jury or what should have been important to the jury. My client, during the preparation of this case, was often critical of me by saying, McKinley, you think too much like a lawyer. And by that, he was saying, you know, you're trained to assess evidence and look at facts and determine what facts are important, what facts are significant, what facts are critical. But understand that as lawyers and as judges, what we think is important, what we think is critical, many times has no significance to a jury. And conversely, many times what we think may be of no significance has considerable impact on a jury. That's why it's important to recognize...
I don't understand how this line of argument helps you. Are you asking us to say that we should start reversing verdicts if the judge excludes something that is legally irrelevant on the ground that jurors might have responded to legally irrelevant things?
No, Your Honor, but I'm asking...
We run the legal system on the ground that there are rules and jurors follow the rules. A plea that seems to be based on the ground that jurors behave arbitrarily, whimsically, and irrationally doesn't seem to lead to any concrete proposal other than that maybe judges should behave arbitrarily, whimsically, and erratically. In that event, why do you bother writing briefs?
Your Honor, let me respond by saying that I recognize that the judge has broad discretion in this area, and I'm not advocating this court overturn existing precedent. That discretion that the trial court has to be circumscribed by the need to alleviate confusion when there is confusion expressed and the need to assure that there's a fair trial. When we think about why the court has this discretion, there's really only two reasons why it is given that discretion. Number one, because such requests can serve to slow the trial down. And number two, because such requests might result, if transcripts are provided, in the jury giving undue emphasis to a particular bit of testimony. And I submit that in the absence of one of those circumstances, the jury has that duty of extra care in responding to the jury's request on an issue where they're clearly confused or where there's disagreement. Neither of those circumstances were present here. That is, there was, we're looking at a relatively brief excerpt of testimony that had been requested. It couldn't have been any more than a few pages. Coupled with an instruction to the jury not to give those particular pages or that particular bit of testimony undue emphasis would have been what I submit would have been appropriate in this case. And accordingly, we'd ask this court to conclude that the judge did in fact abuse his discretion. The case be remanded. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Minkler.
Thank you. May it please the court, Josh Minkler, representing the United States of America. Mr. McKinley has correctly framed the issue. What we are here to determine is whether Judge McKinney abused his discretion when the jury asked to review testimony, and he replied by informing them that they should rely on their collective memory. I believe there are four factors that were present in the trial which supports Judge McKinney's determination that in this particular case, it was appropriate for the jurors to rely on their collective memory and not to get a transcript of a witness's testimony.
So why did he think they were going to come back and ask for a transcript again once he'd instructed them that we do not have prepared witness transcripts?
I don't know what Judge McKinney was thinking. I can presume that he thought, look, if I tell them I don't have prepared witness transcripts, they might be able to say, please rely on your collective memory. They might say together, okay, let's think about this. Yep, you're right.
That I have no doubt about.
Right.
The comment about if they come back again in a half an hour and nag me, for a transcript, am I going to take it back, in a sense? Jurors hopefully place a considerable weight on what the judge tells them.
Certainly.
If the judge says we don't have the transcript, why do we think, I mean, it's kind of like a 3-year-old, well, you know, we still want one even though you don't have it. Are they really going to say that?
I mean, once again, we're moving into what the possible ramifications could have been. The jury could have said, look, judge, we've been back here for 2 hours trying to use our collective memory. We want to know one specific thing which we think is in this transcript. But once again, we don't know what that is. I mean, my recollection is, and maybe Mr. McKinley can clear that up, that shortly after he said, use your collective memories, the jury came back with a verdict. I mean, it was very, very quick after.
My only point is that this looks much more like a case where he just says no rather than no with an outlet. That's all. Now, as such...
But I think if you look at the trial as a whole, there are a lot of reasons which, once again, we're presuming went through Judge McKinney's mind, where he said, use your collective memories on this one. I think number one was the short length of the trial. I mean, we're talking about a trial including arguments and instructions that lasted less than 7 hours. He did permit note-taking, which is an assistance for the jurors in their collective memories. The testimony, if you look at it, and there's a transcript of it included in Mr. McKinley's brief, is very straightforward. It really, and once again, this is my opinion, as I look at it, is not too confusing in nature. There's not anything where a jury would have difficulty misunderstanding his testimony.
I assume you're not saying the presentation of the prosecution's evidence here was not as confused as we usually do it in the Southern District of Indiana.
Right. This was very straightforward. This was a straightforward one as opposed to my usual confusing manner of presentation.
Uh-huh.
It was a much shorter and simpler trial.
So when we write the opinion, we'll say the prosecutor here believes that he was not as confused as usual.
I take that as a compliment from this court.
Hmm.
But anyway, I will say that what I was trying to say is anyway that the testimony of the officer was straightforward and not confusing in nature. Not the case as a whole. The case as a whole, I think, was also straightforward and not confusing. But the testimony and the transcript of Officer Hipple was very straightforward. Basically, he knocked and announced, came in the door, looked in the kitchen, went to the bedroom, and found the defendant. There was really nothing confusing about that testimony that needed to be clarified by providing a transcript. And the reason I point that out is that there are cases where if the testimony is confusing or is not straightforward, it might be an abuse of discretion for a judge not to give a transcript of the testimony. And finally, I don't think this particular testimony was essential for the conviction. The case in terms of this particular count that Mr. Davis was convicted of, there was a call made to Mr. Davis, cocaine was ordered, the place where the cocaine was to be picked up was at this house. They went to the house, which was Mr. Davis's house. He was the only person found in the house, and his palm print is on a scale where the cocaine was discovered. So my characterization of Officer Hipple's testimony was not essential to his conviction. So since Judge McKinney found that the trial was short, note-taking was permitted, Officer Hipple's testimony was straightforward and not confusing in nature, and his testimony was not essential, I think Judge McKinney made the correct call on this one and saying you should rely on your collective memories. And I believe he did not abuse his discretion, and his judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Minkler. Anything further, Mr. McKinney? Mr. McKinley? Mr. McKinney tried the case. Mr. McKinley. All right. There we go.
Just briefly, Your Honor, to say that the testimony of this witness is straightforward and to say that this testimony was not essential to support a conviction is the expression of an opinion by a lawyer. Again, lawyers don't decide these issues. It was clearly a question. There was clearly a question for this jury, an issue that they were struggling with. Then it wasn't straightforward to them. They wanted some clarification for whatever reason. And under the circumstances that existed here, the short amount of time that would have been involved to prepare that transcript, I believe it would have been appropriate and that the court, in fact, abused its discretion. The court has no other questions. I have nothing further to add other than my client asked me to express his appreciation for allowing me to be heard and for this issue to be given the consideration that it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.